Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are going through the Constitution still. And as a matter of fact, on the last episode, or in the last episode, we rounded up and finished with Article 2, Section 2. So what we're going to do, because in the last episode, like I told you, when we get to a point where we really want to focus on that, I just kept reading through to finish up with Section 2. And now we're going to go back to Article 2, Section 1, and the choosing of the president, because there are two amendments that affect Article 1, Section 1, or Article 2, Section 1. And so what we will do is I'm going to read the part of Article 2, Section 1. For some reason, I want to say Article 1. Article 2, Section 1. And then I'm going to read the 12th Amendment. And then I'm going to read the 20th Amendment. Then I'm going to read the Constitution as it basically putting all these words together, how it should read. Now, this is really important. Why do they do this? There was a big debate at the very beginning when they were debating the Bill of Rights. James Madison insisted that they insert the new text exactly where it belongs, so that when a person reads the Constitution, if there's any changes to the text, they will read it as it's supposed to be read, instead of placing it at the end and forcing them to imagine how to read that in context to the specific article and section. Well, Roger Sherman said, you know what? No, we need to make these things separate so people can see them separately. To me, that was a huge mistake, because most people, as they make these amendments and changes, most people don't go back to or don't understand that there is an amendment that's actually changed these words, and now we're supposed to be following something different. Instead, and this is one of the reasons why, the Bill of Rights is what people believe is the Constitution. I mean, when you start reading the Constitution, people go, well, that's interesting. What is that? But if you read the Bill of Rights, people will tell you, oh, well, that's the Constitution. That's how far we have slid from really understanding the Constitution and its amendments. But anyway, this is really, really important. So when we finish the obligatories, we're going to go right back and we're going to focus on the Electoral College and the process of choosing a president. And as we do this, I'll remind you, but as we do this, I want you to think about how we're doing the process today. Okay, so as you know, this show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show that provides the academic-based evidence regarding the problems and regarding the solution. We actually, we stand behind the solutions that we're providing you, and we defy anybody to prove otherwise that what we're asserting is incorrect. There are people that lie about what we're doing and say, oh, well, that's a backdoor to the convention, but we are not a pathway to the convention. As a matter of fact, Republic Review is the process of getting states to rescind their application for the Article 5 convention. So to be clear, we're actually the anti-Article 5. We're not just lip service and people saying, oh, it's a bad thing. Article 5 is a bad thing. Well, we actually have a process within Republic Review that as the states join in enforcing their compact, they rescind their amendment petition if they want to get involved. And that's a very critical point that these liars do not want you to know. And so if you ever get told that, oh, Republic Review is, a pathway to the Article 5 Convention, say, well, then why is it the only process that actually has states rescinding their Article 5 applications? Well, I don't know. I didn't know that. And that's probably how they'd sound. And they would go, well, I have to look into that, because they'll realize that they're not going to gain anything in conversing with you any further. And they will just absquatulate. And what does absquatulate mean? They're going to leave abruptly. Anyway, I've been asking you, have you been pondering your role regarding petitions, common law grand juries, and using petitions to convene common law grand juries and the militia? I also want to let you know that we are focused, and what we're trying to do is get you to focus on compliance to the Constitution. And the best way to understand what compliance really is by going through it. That's why we go through these things. And this is why we continually reread and go over these things with the ratification debates and so forth. You can watch the news cycle and be entertained with just how bad the Democrats, how far along the communist movement is. If you have any doubt, it's getting worse, okay? You can just bet when you wake up tomorrow, it's only getting worse. And Trump is not the, you know, the godsend in saving America. It literally has to be you and I enforcing our state legislators to do their job, because nobody else is doing this. Now, we do have other tools and mechanisms to start, you know, knocking down obstacles like these politicians who are violating the oath of office. That's what we're using these petitions for. That's what the common law grand jury is for. This is how we're clearing and draining the swamp, but we still have to have Republic Review. Do not think that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is the godsend and it's the answer to everything. It is not. What it does is it gets rid of bad, corrupt politicians, gets them out of the way. We still have to get our Constitution-loving citizens and our people to become public servants so that they can do the job in auditing the Constitution and getting the federal government into full compliance. You, these things work together, but they are not, they're not all a part of Republic Review. And so I, you know, you have to identify that there are multiple processes that we need to be executing. And so while you're wasting time watching and or entertaining yourself, the just to reassure you, the problem is only going to get worse. So with that, let's dive into the 12th Amendment. And again, not the 12th Amendment, but the whole Electoral College process. So Section 1 is how it is described. And so the very first part of Section 1 is subsection 1 just identifies that the executive power is in the president and the vice president. So it is Section 2 or subsection 2 of Section 1 that talks about the Electoral College. And the Constitution, Article 2, Section 1, Subsection 2 states, each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in Congress, but no senator or representative or person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States shall be appointed an elector. Now, I want you to also understand that in Article 1, it identifies what the qualifications are for an elector. And it is the basic requirements for Congress. In other words, you have to be a U.S. citizen for so many years, and you have to be 25 years or older. Now, I have seen where states have actually elected for their elector somebody that was just 18, that just turned 18. Well, as far as I'm concerned, there's nowhere in here where we're going to read that allows somebody of voting age to be able to participate. Excuse me. And so here we go. This is the words that have been changed, but this is currently what you would read in Article 2 of the Constitution. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for two persons, of whom one at least shall be an inhabitant of the same state with themselves. And, in other words, this is who they're choosing for president. And so, and basically what they're saying is you can't have a president and vice president that are residents of the same state. And they shall make a list of all persons voted for, which list they shall sign and certify and transmit sealed to the seat of government of the United States, directed to the president of the Senate. The president of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the votes shall then be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes shall be the president, if such number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed. And if there be more than one who shall have such majority and have an equal number of votes, then the House of Representatives shall immediately choose by ballot one of them for president. Now, we're at a heartbreak, so we're going to come right back in reading this. This is the part that's been changed out of Article 2, Section 1, Subsection 2. And then we'll read the 12th Amendment and the 20th Amendment. And then we're going to read it all together as it should be. And you will see how much clearer it makes. But we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. Okay, so I'll read the last section that I just read over again so we can, you know, take it on from there. The person having the greatest numbers of votes shall be the president, if such a number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed, and if there be more than one who have such majority and have an equal number of votes as the other person that I'm inserting this is that other person that, you know, has a majority, then the House of Representatives shall immediately choose by ballot one of them for president. And if no person have a majority, then from the five highest on the list, the said House shall in a manner choose the president. Now, how could we have five on the list when the parties only allow two? So apparently they're talking and they're being clear here that the party does not control who is available to be elected. There's nothing in the Constitution that facilitates the power granted to the party to choose down their representative. It's very clear that the electors are supposed to be able to choose from the entire field, and that's what it states here. But if choosing the president, the votes shall be taken by states, the representation from each state having one vote, a quorum for this purpose shall consist of a member or members from two-thirds of the states, and if a majority of all the states shall be necessary to a choice, in every case after the choice of the president, the person having the greatest number of votes of the electors shall be the vice president. But if there should remain two or more who have equal votes, the Senate shall choose from them by ballot the vice president. So, and they basically tell you that these people are really voting for one person. I think they actually vote for two people on a single vote. Let me see here. The electors in the states, and they shall make a list of all persons which they shall sign and certify and seal and direct it to the president. So, oh yeah, right here. And vote by ballot for two persons, one of whom shall not be an inhabitant of that same state. So what they're doing is they're writing two names on a piece of paper for president, and the beauty prize goes to the vice president. So in other words, there's no accounting of a ticket in this process. The electors choose independently two people, and whoever gets the most becomes president, and whoever gets the second most becomes vice president. There's no, okay, if you choose this guy, you have to take this guy, okay? The Congress may determine the time of choosing the electors and the day on which they shall give their votes, which day shall be the same throughout the United States. And so when do we choose the electors? Well, technically, because let me ask you this. Are you voting for your elector? No. And as a matter of fact, it states up here that each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number. So in other words, they shall have the manner of the election process to which the state may be entitled in Congress. And then they say who can't be an elector, but they do not authorize the states to appoint the electors for us, or the basically determine the outcome instead of allowing us to vote who our elector is to be. So this is a huge, important piece of information. We're going to hold on to this as we go through this process, because this concept of winner takes all is repugnant to Republican government and is repugnant to our democratic process of choosing our electors who are to choose our president. We are not, nowhere in here does it say that a popular vote for the president, it is that we are to pick an elector, okay? And what happened was the party came in the 1860s, and they got Congress to go ahead and start accommodating the party so that they would take control. Well, I'm just telling you right now, folks, if by the choosing of ballots, this minor change that they made, that took a lot of words, but it was really a minor change in the grand scheme of things. Well, if they required an amendment to do that, then there should be an amendment to allow state legislatures to dictate the outcome. That if by a majority of vote within the states, they will determine who your elector will be. Are you kidding me? There's no way they would have got the muster and actually allowed. There's no way the states and the people would allow that type of amendment. So why is it that we're pandering to the party system at this point? It is strictly because the party has colluded with Congress, and basically the party is this uniparty is in control to make sure that they have control of who becomes the president of the United States. This is why GR will never become the president of the United States. Anyway, ha 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 ha. Anyway, so what we're going to do now is I'm going to read what has changed in the 12th Amendment. And this is the subsection 2. Remember, it started off in the first one, the electors shall meet in their respective states. Now, this is the words that have changed. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for president and vice president, one of whom at least shall not be an inhabitant of the state within themselves. Okay, so all they did was they basically said that they were now to identify not two names for president, but one name for president and one name for vice president. They couldn't be the same. They shall name in their ballots the person voted for as president and in distinct ballots the person voted for as vice president. Now, this is important because this is how it is supposed to be done. And the number of votes for each which lists they shall sign and certify and transmit sealed to the seat of government of the United States, directed to the President of the Senate. The President of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and the House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the votes shall then be counted. Now, see, the process is pretty much the same, other than the fact that instead of voting for two people for president, you now identify who you're voting for president and who you're voting for vice president. Still, does not allow tickets and the down selecting by the party. In other words, these electors should have the entire field that they are to choose from. And they are to basically choose based on the wishes and desires of those in the congressional district. In other words, we're a representative government and our electors are our representatives of who they should be voting for. Okay, so moving on, and the number of votes for each which list they shall sign and certify and transmit sealed to the seat of government, the United States, directed to the President of the Senate. No change there. The President of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates and the votes shall be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be the president. If such a number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed, and if no person have such majority, then the persons having the highest numbers, not exceeding three on the list of those voted for as president, the House of Representatives shall choose immediately by ballot the president. But in choosing the president, the vote shall be taken by states, the representation from each state having one vote. Okay, did you understand that? But in choosing the president, the vote shall be taken by states, the representation from each state having one vote. A quorum for this purpose shall consist of a member or members from two-thirds of the states, and a majority of the states shall be necessary to a choice. And if the House of Representatives shall not choose the president whenever the right of choice shall be devolved upon them before the fourth day of March next following, then the vice president shall act as president as in case of death and other constitutional disability of the president. Okay, so this little part that I just read is a part of the 20th Amendment. So I'll read it again. And if the House of Representatives shall not choose a president whenever the right of choice shall devolve upon them before the fourth day of March next following, then the vice president shall act as president as in the case of the death or the constitutional disability of the president. And then the next section, the person having the greatest numbers of votes as vice president shall be the vice president, if such numbers be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed, and if no person have a majority, then from the two highest numbers, in other words, let's say they've got two people, but they just don't have a majority. In other words, you have to have a majority to win. And if two people happen to have the same amount of votes, then, and I think basically they're just trying to make sure that they have a majority and or a consensus. So they're down selecting at this point. But we're going to get back into the 12th Amendment as we come back from this break, because I want to finish this up and then read the 20th Amendment. And then we're going to read this as it is supposed to be read, had they stitched everything together for you so that it doesn't hurt anybody's head. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so now we're going to wrap up this subsection 3 that is a part of the 12th Amendment. If such numbers be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed, and if no person have a majority, then from the two highest numbers on the list, the Senate shall choose the vice president. A quorum for the purpose shall consist of 2/3 of the whole number of senators, and a majority of the whole number shall be necessary to a choice, but no person constitutionally ineligible of the office of president shall be eligible to that of vice president and the president of the United States. Now, again, a little portion of the 12th Amendment was changed by the, that's right, the 20th Amendment. And so I'm going to just read that right now. This is the part that has been changed. This is still the 12th Amendment, and then we'll read the 20th Amendment. To stitch it all together, we'll read it all together at once. So this is the part that gets changed. And if the House of Representatives shall not choose a president whenever the right of choice shall devolve upon them before the 4th day of March next following, then the vice president shall act as president as in case of the death or other constitutional disability of the president. Okay. Now the 20th And this is just the words, because the 20th Amendment has a lot more to it. So these are only the words that change this, the choosing of the president. And it's subsection 3 of the 20th Amendment. And it goes, if at the time fixed for the beginning of the term of the president-elect shall have died, the vice president-elect shall become president. If a president shall not have been chosen before the time fixed for the beginning of this term, or if the president-elect shall have failed to qualify, and so interestingly enough, there is a mechanism because somebody is not qualified, then the vice president shall elect, shall act as president until a president shall have qualified. And the Congress may, by law, provide for the case wherein neither a president-elect nor a vice president shall have qualified, declaring who shall then act as president, or the manner in which one who is to act shall be seated. Such person shall act accordingly until a president or vice president shall have qualified. So, it doesn't say exactly who is to be seated if we can't get a president and vice president qualified. But it basically says that, and Congress may by law, in case of neither president shall have qualified, in declaring who shall then act as president. So in other words, it is left up to Congress. Nowhere in here does it say that the House of Representatives shall who is Congress? The House of Representatives and the Senate. In other words, both houses must actually concur with who is going to become president. And you know what? With a divided House, with the Congress being controlled on one side in the House by the Democrats and the other side by the Republicans, well, do the Republicans really control the Senate? Because they've got these communist rhinos like Mitt Romney and the senator from Maine. I mean, there's way too many senators that are wearing the Republican name, but they are not Republicans. They don't vote in, and I'll just say, in the direction or align with what a Republican would expect them to do. So just something for you to, to cogitate. Okay. So here is what is actually to be read, and this is Article 2, Section 1, as the amendment has been finalized with regards to stitching together the, help me out here, the original portion of the Constitution, as well as the amendment, the 12th Amendment, as well as the 20th Amendment. So this is how it would read if everything was stitched together. Now, again, subsection 1 of Article 2, Section 1 does not change that the power shall be vested in the president of America and the vice president and so forth. Anyway, subsection 2, this is how it's to be read. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature may direct a number of electors. It doesn't tell you that they're to appoint the electors. They're to appoint a number of the electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives. So Wyoming gets 3 because they have 2 senators and 1 representative. So they shall appoint the number of electors that will be available to which the state may be entitled in the Congress, but no senator or representative or person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States shall be appointed an elector. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote. There it is. So they can choose the number in such manner that they may. So again, I'm going to read this again. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number. So it doesn't say that they have the ability to choose how those electors are going to become, or the outcome of who becomes an elector. It doesn't say that the state legislature has the ability and the power to use the parties to control your electors. They're only to basically, as in such manners may direct, a number of electors. In other words, they are to appoint a number of electors. In other words, based on the census of 2010, Wyoming gets 3. And so they're basically to appoint the fact that there will be 3 electors, and it will be based on. And so here's the other thing that I think they have a choice on. They have a choice of how these 2 for Senate and the 1 for representatives shall be voted. And 9 times out of 10, that would be done in the state of Wyoming by popular vote, because you do not have any splits of the congressional district. And so what the people would be voting on, it doesn't say anywhere that you were to vote on the president. No, they shall appoint a number of electors, not who those electors will be via party or anything like that. In other words, you are not supposed to be voting for president. You are supposed to be voting for your elector who will then vote for president. There's no way, no how, that the Constitution has given the state legislatures the power to lock down who is going to become your elector. It is repugnant to a Republican form of government, because a Republican form of government is a representative form of government, that the people choose their representatives, not the state legislatures choosing for the people. The Constitution clearly changed with the 17th Amendment, which we need to repeal, but the people even choose their senators now. So why would it be okay for the state legislators to say, well, if the popular vote chose the Democratic ticket, then the electors shall vote for that? They can't dictate who the electors are to vote for, and they cannot dictate that type of an outcome. They only dictate how many you are to have and how that's to be broken down. In other words, again, the Senate or 2 of the electors should be voted for. If you understand representation, everybody should be able to vote for 2 electors that would fill the seat of the Senate, because they represent the entire state. So the entire state should be able to vote for 2 electors. And then you and your congressional district should be able to vote for 1 other elector that would represent your elective or your congressional district. Does this make sense? It should. And so what should be happening is there should be campaigns for electors running at the state level. So there'd be an at-large elector to represent the Senate. And your congressional district, that person must reside within your congressional district so that you can vote for them as well to represent your congressional district. Of course, the 2 at large can live anywhere, and they don't necessarily have to be tied to a congressional district. They just have to be tied to the state. That would be representative of our representation in Congress. Therefore, as we move forward, but no senator or representative or person holding an office under the profit of the United States shall be appointed an elector. The electors shall meet in their respective states. So in other words, now we have the election for the president, and now the electors will meet and vote by ballot for president and vice president, one of whom at least shall not be an inhabitant of the same state with themselves. In other words, if you are voting for any on the ballot, you cannot vote for 2 Washingtonians if you're in the state of Washington. These electors are free to choose. They just can't choose 2, a president and a vice president that reside in the same state. That's what they're really saying. When we come back, we're going to finish going through this. This is why this is so important, and this is why I am proving to you that we are violating the Constitution and have been, and we have no longer abided by a Republican form of government because the parties has violated the Constitution without us knowing. Here we'll be right back after this.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so we're going to read that little last part over again. And notice there's no notion or concept of compulsion. In other words, that the electors shall vote as they are told. No. The electors are our representatives, but they are to choose as they think. See, it's an honor position within our Republican form of government that we choose the best and the brightest among us to actually vote for that person that does, you know, it, that they believe would be the best. This was all done because of an illiterate America. They knew that the majority of Americans were illiterate and they wouldn't know who would be best to vote for. So again, notice that there's no compulsion, that these electors are free to choose whomever that is available for president. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for president and vice president, one of whom at least shall not be an inhabitant of the same state as with themselves. They shall name in their ballots the person voted for as president, and in a distinct ballots the person voted for as vice president, and the number of votes for each, which list they shall sign and certify. In other words, it's when they sign and certify it, it is to identify how many votes for this president, how many votes for this president, how many votes for this president, this president, this president, and this president, and how many votes for this vice president, this vice president, this vice president, this vice president. Okay? No, there's nothing about a popular vote and or a general election where we the people do not choose our electors, or where the party gets to choose the electors who are to represent us. The state only can dictate how many electors that we are to choose. And that guidance is that comes from basically Congress and the census to determine how many representatives in the electors we will have. And anyway, they shall sign and certify, and transmit sealed to the seat of government of the United States, directed to the President of the Senate. The President of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the votes shall be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be the president. If such number, and this is how it comes via the Electoral College, not by popular vote. The electors will determine. So this concept that the popular vote can actually dictate the outcome, no. It is the votes by electors which dictate the outcome. If such a number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed, and if no person have such majority, then from the persons having the highest numbers not to exceed three on the list for those voted for as president, the House of Representatives shall choose immediately by ballot the president out of those three. But in choosing the president, the votes shall be taken by states. The representation from each state having one vote, a quorum for such purpose shall consist of a member or members from two-thirds of the states. And, in other words, at a minimum, you have to have two-thirds of the states for this to be a legitimate process. And a majority of all states shall be necessary to a choice. If at the time fixed for the beginning of the term of president, the president-elect shall have died, the vice-president-elect shall become president. If a president shall not have been chosen before the fixed time for the beginning of his term, or if the president-elect shall have failed to qualify, then the vice president shall act as president until a president shall have qualified. And the Congress may by law provide for the case wherein neither a president-elect nor a vice president-elect shall have qualified, declaring who shall then act as president or the manner in which one who is to act shall be selected, and such person shall act according until the president or vice president shall have qualified. So in other words, they can pick somebody who acts, but that is not based on the House of Representatives. That is based on the entire Congress must vote to support whoever is to act as president. Clearly, the House of Representatives is not Congress. That is only one half of Congress. Because that's why it says, and the Congress may by law provide for the case wherein a House of President and shall have qualified, declaring who shall then act as president. So my folks, the reason we went through this is to really clarify the fact that a popular vote is outright unconstitutional based on the Constitution the way it is written, that the electors and only the electors are to vote and to choose and provide the names of choice. In other words, there can be three out of the top, you know, three that would go then to the House of Representatives, but it is not dictated by party. Sorry, the party has gotten away with these shenanigans for well over 150 years. Well, it's now time to actually start abiding by, and you know, we need to start popping the bubble to let people know you do not have a leg to stand on, even though this idiot tries to claim that the popular vote has been driving this process for a long time. No. That's, you know, we started deviating from the Constitution with statute and regulations allowing that. There was always an election of electors, and that the popular vote would dictate who the elector was, but they never, in the very beginning, allowed a popular vote for the people to vote for who the president was to be. They actually voted for electors, and the electors actually voted. So this concept, as a matter of fact, we've had this conversation. I need to probably go back to having this conversation with Keith Broders. He even has the, you know, a lot of the history regarding this so that people can actually go, oh, wow, that's interesting. Why is it that these people that are trying to push this popular vote thing as a legitimate process? As I proved to you, that the electors are the ones to vote. It does not, if they want to go down the path of having a popular vote, you must amend the Constitution, period. Why? Because when they made changes that the electors would vote for president and vice president, but not tell, you know, not identify which vote, to then in 1800 change that to say, I am voting for this person for president and this person for vice president, to clarify where those votes are being counted, instead of it just be counted total for president and the least number of votes for that name becomes the vice president. They alleviated that. They clarified that electors are to vote independently for a president and independently for a vice president. Nowhere was there any allocation or it was never facilitated by the constitutions and the amendments to allow parties to create tickets to tie the hands of the electors. The electors are to be our representatives and to freely choose our president, not a popular vote. So, as we move forward, Section 3 and the last section of Article 2 states this: he shall from time to time give to the Congress information of the State of the Union, his State of the Union address, and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. He may, on extraordinary occasions, convene both houses or either of them, and in the case of disagreement between them with respect to the time and adjournment, he may adjoin them or adjourn them to such time as he shall think proper. He shall receive ambassadors and other public ministers. He should take care that the laws be faithfully executed, and shall commission all officers of the United States. And finally, Section 4, the President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, and or high crimes and misdemeanors. Interestingly, they do not include that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment has changed some of this, because Section 3 basically states anybody who violates their oath of office and supports rebellion against the Constitution, in other words, supports people writing laws that are a violation of the Constitution, or supporting processes like the popular vote that would be a violation of the Constitution, then they are ineligible. When we start really looking at what it means to support and follow the Constitution verbatim, we start realizing that there are so many public servants that don't even understand the Constitution and how they're egregiously violating this. I mean, blatantly violating. With that, we will be back in our next segment with Article 3. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am
trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.